Welcome to Omschooling for Spirituality. The Flow is a delightful mix of insight, divine inspiration, and humor, where wisdom meets earthiness to help your ongoing spiritual growth and transformation. Follow the flow of enlightenment and explore everything spiritual through the deepest self-inquiry as student Lisa Berry asks master spiritual teacher G.P. Walsh the kinds of questions you would ask an elder, a wise man, or a sage, and receive direct, simple, comprehensive, and deeply human lessons and teachings. From transcending the experience of separation, releasing old conditioned patterns and wounds, and alleviating suffering, to demystifying esoteric practices and revealing one's true purpose and innate freedom. Welcome to the flow of enlightenment. Transformation is all there is.
Welcome, everybody, to the flow of enlightenment. Hello, GP.
Hello, Lisa.
We are here. You know what? This week, I have to say, was the fastest week, I think, of the year yet for me. There's like, what? It can't be.
It can't be Tuesday.
I was going to ask you, like, what happens then when we get in this? Is it literally because time doesn't exist that we suddenly go, well, it doesn't exist? Yeah, because I didn't even have any this week.
It's all perception.
Yeah,
I mean, we say, you know, time is always moving at the same speed, but that's only because we measure it by the clock, which is an artificial mechanical device that we created that just tick, 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 tick. But it's completely artificial. I mean, your actual sense of time is relative.
I mean,
it's consistent within our world, right? We can talk about it and we have the clock, but, you know, that was one of the big things that Einstein showed is as motion speeds up, time slows down.
Well, oh, so wait.
It's a completely relative thing. Yes.
Why? Okay. Wait, no, I don't get that. Hold on.
Yeah, well, it's not the way we normally think, because we think of time as something very consistent. But the faster you go, the closer you get to the speed of light, the slower time is. That theoretically, at the speed of light, time would stop.
Oh, so when we say like light years away, it sounds far away, but it could be in a flash too.
If we could get to the speed of light,
yeah.
But even that becomes, yeah. Yes, the time elapsed would be like nothing.
Right, yeah.
So it's very strange and paradoxical, and it's so far outside of our normal conventional way of thinking that we can't deal with it. But it has been tested. They've put very sensitive atomic clocks onto airplanes, you know, jet airplanes, you know, going 700 miles an hour.
Right.
And it, in fact, slows down. It's measurable.
I didn't
the clock
know
slows
that.
Down.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, that is super cool. And wow, holy, I did not know, I did not mean to go there, but that was fun.
there's your little physics lesson for today.
Yes, I think that's fascinating. I hope everybody enjoyed that, just especially like you always pull some goodies out of your hat there. So,
and I never wear a hat. Think about it.
It's just in another light year. You don't see it.
That's right. That's correct.
Today is really, I wanted the show to be, and it is, it totally is about, you know, some of the four, one or two of the four powers of creation we are going to cover and touch on, because, you know, those powers of creation, they touch everything. But today was interesting because I titled this, it's perfect. Except for one thing. And I know that we have all said this so many times, and you, GP, have mentioned, you know, when we are perfect, but we're in this cage of dissatisfaction of, I want to change this thing, or it's I came up with either it's not an I'm whatever, it's not enough, not accepted, and not fair.
Yes.
And those are kind of all beliefs. So I was going to ask you, you know, we all walk around, and I was thinking of some examples, you know, oh, this day would be perfect if it was just a few degrees hotter, or it would be, my bank account would be perfect if it had an extra 100,000, or, you know, or yeah. I had a perfect day today, except for I didn't get enough water in. Like it's from the smallest to the biggest. Why are we constantly in our cage of dissatisfaction?
Because the egoic mind is its very nature is dissatisfaction. And our attention is never in this moment. It's always comparing this moment to some other moment, a better past or a better imagined future. And as long as we do that, this moment will never be okay. And we've all been just become so habituated to thinking that way that we're always looking for what's missing. It's just the way you've been programmed to be. It's not natural. It's not inherent. There's nothing special about it. It's just kind of this cultural thing that's developed over thousands of years, and it's the way all cultures operate. It's never enough. This moment is never enough. And it doesn't matter how much you have. It really doesn't. Many years ago, I think it was Tony Robbins did a book where he interviewed a bunch of billionaires, right? And he was just shocked to find out none of them were happy, and none of them felt stable or safe. They were worried about their money.
Right. Yes.
So it doesn't matter how much you have. It won't be enough, because the nature of the egoic mind, the nature of that sense of a separate self, is dissatisfaction. You can't escape it. You cannot satisfy the ego. It's a hungry ghost.
So should we bother trying? Okay. Like, is there any point
no.
in trying?
No, you shouldn't. Oh. You should transcend the ego. Get rid of it. Free yourself from it. It's not you.
That's
the only way. Yeah, and that's why I argue with self-help all the time. It's like giving medicine to a ghost.
Yes.
It's not going to work. Nothing's going to happen. You're trying to improve something which is inherently flawed. Discover who you are, which is not flawed. There's nothing wrong with you. But our attention wanders endlessly towards what we've been taught is the thing that's going to satisfy this discontent. And we all get aware of it. We're all aware of this discontent. It drives our whole lives. Pretty much everything we do, everything we try to do. What are we trying to do? We're trying to be happy. Right? And we've been taught that happiness, you know, in the United States, geez, it's in the preamble to the Constitution, right? The Declaration of Independence. The pursuit of happiness. The endless pursuit of happiness. Never the finding of it. And because it's been interpreted, happiness being some kind of a material state, some kind of a possession, a relationship, health, you know, money, a peak experience, an emotional state, something other than myself. And it's always that. This idea that I'm not happy, I'm inherently not happy, and I can't be happy unless I get. And then there's that list of infinite prerequisites that you just keep checking off, and it never works, because it can't work.
Now, I remember hearing a scientist at one point share with, you know, the listeners of the podcast that it's actually set in our brain that we, in order to survive, the human body, the brain, ego in this case too, is that if it doesn't have something that it is pursuing, so it's actually that it doesn't even need to attain it, and it almost doesn't want to in some ways, because it, like the chase, but that's actually keeping us going and alive is the pursuit.
Yeah, and that's kind of the leading materialistic view of psychology, of science, of neurology and the like, that we need to be pursued by something in order to run away, and we need to be discontent in order to seek or to grow, which is a complete denial of the notion that maybe just evolution and growth is in our nature, and we couldn't stop it if we wanted to, and we don't have to pursue it. It's just going to happen. And I think the argument for that is quite strong. I mean, if, you know, the lions out in the Serengeti, you know, they get hungry, they go chase something down, they kill it, they eat, they lay around and sleep for 3 days, you know?
Yes.
Have little baby lions and stuff like that. But what happens to you as a human being when you're content like that, when suddenly all your needs are met? You don't just sit there and stare at the TV. You want to do something, build something, create something, and express something. That's our nature. When that gets shut down, you get the couch potato who sits, you know, staring at his 80-inch TV and thinking he's in heaven, and he's completely unhappy because he's not actually doing anything. It's part of our nature. So I completely disagree with that idea. We don't need that. That's also a justification by conservative parties all over the world. They say, well, if we give them something, we're just going to demotivate them. That right. It's only fear that motivates us, which is a horrific way of looking at humanity. It's just so demeaning and arrogant.
Yes, paralyzing to those who are really taking it to another level, thinking like, well, wait, I can't do anything now because I'm so afraid if I make a decision or go after something or like, and that's where decisions become very difficult. How they would like to express, they can't even figure out how they want to express themselves actually because they're so afraid.
Yes, it's actually true. I was listening to an interview with somebody. It was on Canadian TV, and it was talking about healthcare. and of course, in Canada, you have universal healthcare. And he was just talking about it, and the guy who was being interviewed was American. And he was saying, "Oh my God, I hadn't even thought about that. People don't start businesses; they don't go just looking for the job that really suits them. They don't go trying things out. They don't go back to school." For the most part, because they don't have health insurance, and it's so expensive to get if you don't have it through your employer. So the impact of these kinds of things, where in a country that says social, if we give them social programs, it's going to demotivate them. And in fact, exactly the opposite is demonstrably true and statistically validated. So it's the way we want to see what human nature really is. Human nature is just so dynamic. The problem is 99% of the time we are in a defensive posture. Yeah. And so the expressive side of us is just completely squashed. Because it is true that if I'm in danger, that becomes the priority. Survival is a priority, obviously. Self-expression doesn't mean anything if I'm dead, right?
Right.
So when we're in that defensive posture, which is for most people most of the time, there isn't much energy left for the creative expression, but the less we're in defensive posture, the energy naturally begins to move towards the expressive side. The happier you are, the more expressive you are. It's really very simple. This is not rocket science, although it contradicts pretty much every philosophy on the planet.
Yes. Funny, such a girl share that I have to do right now is that I was when I was very unhappy in a relationship, and I thought, damn, my makeup always looks good when I'm with this guy and I'm never happy, and then when I go out and have fun and I'm laughing and I'm moving my face all over the place, I look like crap because that breaks the movement.
Boy, what a trade-off.
So much more. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't figure it out. I was like, this is so interesting. But you nailed that when you said so expressive. And sometimes I'm so happy and then I get so expressive that I realize I'm might as well be dancing. I'm just swirling around. Because we have that out of the cage. I'm free.
Look at children.
Yes.
Look at children. That's all you have to do is look at kids and go, oh, that's what we're actually like. They don't sit still. They're not waiting for something. They're not demotivated. It's constant.
Yeah. It's Mom, why did you give constant. Me food? Now I'm going to not do anything. No.
No, I mean, they go to the drop, literally.
Yes. Once they're out of a defensive posture, you know, you've got, okay, I've secured my, you know, I'm safe, I can live, I'm starting to express, but now we move up that level of the ladder or something into, yeah, but those people don't like when I dance like this. They won't accept me. I move differently. I express differently. Like when that acceptance thing, gosh, you just got out of being defensive and safe and get your safety and security. And now you're all worried about, you know, other people accepting you.
Well, that's part of our defense, right? And it's also natural, right? I mean, look at it purely physiologically and biologically. And, you know, humans are basically pack animals, right?
Yes.
We work together as a group. Your survival depends upon your relationship to the group. And so if you are rejected from the group, you die. So so deeply ingrained in us is this sense of needing to get the approval and have status on the most on the most fundamental level. Status not being, you know, being more important, but having a place within the group, because that's the only way our survival was guaranteed. As time has gone on and we've become more psychologically sophisticated and the like, that same energy now, you know, if somebody doesn't like me or somebody rejects me when I ask them out on a date, it can trigger that same feeling of I'm going to die, unless you become conscious of it. If you become conscious, oh, I'm not going to die, I'm just being rejected. Yeah, it hurts, but, you know, it isn't fatal. But at first, it can feel fatal. It can feel as if this is it, my whole life is, because these are the associations that get made. When the ego develops, it hooks in to the nervous system. And so the survival of the ego appears to be a matter of life and death. It feels as if I'm going to die because I've been embarrassed. And it's not true.
Yes.
It's not true. This is an association that has to be seen through and conquered.
Okay. You know what? Because the commercials are going to sneak in there, but I like that. Let's go with this line. Don't let the ego get its hooks into your nervous system. And so when we come back, I would love for you to walk us through, and because you said earlier about we have to transcend the ego. So I would love if we'll visit that so we can help everybody to start the process, at least through awareness and all that other goodies that I don't know. So when we come back on The Flow of Enlightenment with G.P. Walsh and Lisa Berry.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Touch, move, and inspire. Sharing your story of how you overcame your deepest struggle will serve as someone else's survival guide. You are ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page. I'm Jocelyn Bellows, host of Breakdown to Wake Up, a live stream show dedicated to sharing personal journeys of men and women who have traversed through mazes of uncertainty, dark clouds, and dishonoring themselves, and the lessons they have learned along this path of what one can accomplish in our own self-discovery. And as a writing and life coach, I work with men and women to break through the BS of their lives to find their own voice and leaping into a life they love. It is my belief that when we share our stories of how we overcame what we have been through, it will serve as someone else's survival guide. So if you're ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page, I'd love to hear from you. Go to www.jocelynbellows.com and join me every Tuesday at noon Eastern and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern.
If I could be you.
And you could be me. For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
All right, we're back into the flow of enlightenment where all the answers are. Right, GP? Oh, I feel like I come back to this, well, to you, as spiritual teacher and self-inquiry for everything. It's like there's not one question I'm going to have that I can't come here to ask and figure something out. So, which is mind-blowing. I was talking about how, okay, so we're learning, you know, poor ego. It's getting a bad rep. I know it's necessary for certain things, but yes, it really does mess with people. My gosh. And, you know, don't let the ego get its hooks into your nervous system. And why I'm feeling that is more as if it gets out of control, if the perceptions, like you said, it literally can feel like you're dying in certain things out of embarrassment or not accepted. And it really does. I know I've been there. But gosh, it sounds like almost like you have to be a superhero, like somebody really crazy to transcend the ego. How do you even start?
Well, you start by understanding what it is, right?
Ooh,
okay. Yeah, I mean, if you know, it's become the modern devil, right? I mean, it's this horrible thing. If it wasn't for my ego, my life would be wonderful. It's like this little hairy, curmudgeon-y thing hiding in the bushes ready to jump on you. And we turn it into that, right? And of course, when our minds tend to work that way, we turn it into a thing and then make it an enemy. We don't understand what it actually is. It's simply a pattern of thoughts. That's all it is. You know, the way our language works and the way the mind works in terms of abstraction, we take a very complex functions and we give them a name. And then that's called an abstraction, right? So I talk about the body, right? Now, the word body is an abstraction. Most people don't see it that way. Oh, this is the body. Well, the body is 100 trillion cells. Each one of those cells is a living being. So you've got 50 to 100 living beings working together to make this apparently singular thing that obeys your commands and, you know, does what you want it to do and takes care of a whole bunch of stuff on its own that you couldn't take care of because there's too much to do. So when you say body, I can use the shorthand and word body, and we all have an idea of what that is, so I don't have to go describing all 50 to 100 trillion of those little critters. So it's an abstraction. But the moment it becomes a word like that, we very naturally begin to start giving it characteristics. It becomes a thing, a mind object in and of itself. And so now it's a thing, the body. We can talk about the body. Or how about the universe? People say, oh, the universe. I mean, really, 3 syllables, and that's supposed to be the whole thing. And then people think they know what the universe is, right? But all you have is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a notion of an idea of what it is. And the same holds true for the body. And the same holds true for the mind. The mind is just a word. Mind does not exist. Ego doesn't exist as a thing. It is simply a functioning. And the ego is nothing more than all the thoughts you have that revolve around the single thought, I. That's it. In fact, the word ego is the Greek word for I. For some reason, when the translator, I guess he's trying to be erudite or something, when he translated Freud's work, that first book, instead of using the word I, because Freud wrote it just as ich, which is I in German, but this guy, I guess, wanted to be clever, and rather than putting just I in English, he grabbed the Greek word ego. That's all it is I. That's it. Every thought you have about I, if you look at it closely, you'll find that that is ego. It is a function of thinking about myself. Now, once you see that it's not a real thing, it's not what you actually are, it's only thoughts about you, there's immediately some distance between you and that. And that distance is where self-inquiry lives. Is this thought really true? Is this really me? That's the inquiry. And you keep breaking it down and you find it. Well, no, that the I that this is referring to is not me. That I is itself yet another thought in the mind. The concept of I've mistaken for the real I. What's the real I? Well, it's the one hearing my words right now.
What? Oh, sorry, I'm pausing on that one. What if a person maybe they're just not ready. So I'm going to answer my question here. But what if somebody really were just saying, this isn't really me? And they're like, no, of course it is. It's me. And they can't get past it. Is that they just, they're not ready? They can't get there yet?
Well, two things. Either they haven't really understood. That is the whole point of the inquiry. And if this kind of, if what I'm saying has some kind of appeal to you, then you'll begin to question it. You'll begin to go, okay, well, is what he's saying true? Is this really me? I've just assumed it was me. And because I've had that assumption that it was me, I've acted like that. I've experienced that. That's shaped my experience. So it seems to have been true, but is it actually true? That's the point at which you enter the spiritual path. This is the path of self-inquiry. Prior to that, well, nobody asks that. You know, you go to a job interview, they look at your CV, and, oh, this is what you've done, you got all these degrees. None of them say, yeah, but who are you? Who are you really? Nobody says that. You're a bunch of qualities, a bunch of skills, a bunch of stuff. Nobody really asks, well, who am I? Who is the one that's having this experience? Who was there before the thought of I was even there? Because we didn't have that thought as a child. You weren't thinking I. That came later. You were just being. You were before there was any self-image whatsoever. But we accumulate a self-image. Is the self-image myself? Is that really me? And if you look at the nature of mind, you realize it can't be. It's an abstraction. It's a thought. No thought can capture reality. The word universe doesn't capture the universe. And the word I does not capture you. So it's not a matter of not being ready. Usually what makes people ready is they've just suffered enough and had enough frustration and disappointment that they're willing to look at things that they weren't willing to look at otherwise.
Right. They're just like, I can't sit in this anymore. I can't be here anymore. So here,
I just can't do this. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So if we take that and put it with somebody who is, they say, I don't have enough money. I am broke. I am poor. I don't even know financially some things.
Yeah.
It's not like a belief. They're looking at the reality of what they're perceiving as their bank account, and it's really empty, and their cupboards are bare, and they really don't have this. Mm-hmm. By going along, they fit rock bottom and they are willing to have a look. It doesn't just suddenly put money in the bank and food in the cupboards, but it shifts some form of, what is the benefit of figuring out that it's not the I that's poor and broke and has bills?
You get to be happy.
Yeah.
No matter what. And let's face it, the happier you are, the better your life is, right?
Yeah.
But you're no longer striving for anything. You're not trying to get anything. You're not unhappy if the cupboards happen to be bare. If the bank account gets too low, it doesn't disturb you. It isn't a vent. You find the happiness that is you, that is not conditional, that does not depend on circumstances, which means you're no longer a slave to circumstances. And the big one, you're no longer a slave to fear. You don't fear anymore. You're not afraid.
I think that's
that to me is a pretty good reward. It makes it well worth the effort.
What do I get out of this? Well, you won't be a slave to fear. All right. Sign me up.
How about perpetual bliss? How's that?
Yes. Okay. Random big question. Is there somewhere in the world where a lot of these people who have transcended ego and are no longer slaves to fear reside? Like, are they Buddhist monks? Are they, I don't know, just children running around?
Well,
are they?
Yeah, the Buddhist monks are on the path to this. They have dedicated their lives to this. Right. Most have not gotten there yet. The same thing is true in India, which is kind of the motherland, really, of all spirituality and religion. And it was from India that Buddha came, right? I mean, it spread throughout all Asia, but that's where it originated. So that has been the spiritual tradition there for forever. The oldest writings in the world come from there. I think it's like the Vedas or something like that. Mm-hmm. Although there's some kind of historical argument about that, but it's not really all important. The people who actually manage to truly eradicate the ego, truly, what's the word I'm looking for? Get out of the trap of the egoic mind. It's very rare, very rare. Because it's just so ingrained in us, and it's been going on lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So it is not the kind of thing that, and I'll tell you why. Because if somebody's hearing me right now, what they're thinking is, okay, if I can get out of that, well, then I'm going to be able to fill up my bank account. That's what they're thinking. Yeah. We take an idea like that, which is completely, completely different from anything we've ever known. But our minds always associate. We try to memory, we categorize, we compare, we try to fit it into the current context. And as a result, we lose the meaning of it, which is why Christ said you can't put old wine into new wineskins. Mm-hmm. There's a transformation that takes place. He would say, repent, the kingdom of heaven is near. The word repent simply means completely transform your mind.
Oh, okay.
It's a complete transformation of your perception. Of what is real. And little by little, the desire for that level of complete infinite freedom eradicates, kind of phases out all lesser desires until it's the only thing that matters, and your mind really becomes one-pointed. And you're just focused there until that bubble bursts and the entire thing falls away. And you realize it was all an illusion. It was all a self-created suffering. And the self that was suffering is what disappears. I hope I'm not going over people's heads. This is just a radio show, not satsang.
Well, a question there is that, so I'm imagining, so I'm personifying a thing, a person. Mm-hmm. I've got a picture in my mind, and they've done this, and maybe they're the ones out of millions and millions and billions who have not had this, but they did it. They're there. And they don't care if there's money in the bank. It's not that they don't care. Yes, it just doesn't matter anymore because they're happy regardless. Right. Is that individual able to, that's a funny question, is that person able to come back into our ego society and actually live? Or will they get sucked back in? Like, could they fall?
No. Okay, once you've tasted it, there's no going back. Okay. Yeah. You don't see the world. The ego becomes just this, you notice it, but it's like a voice or a radio playing in another room. It's completely irrelevant. It has no impact once you know who you are. You know, once you learn that 2 + 2 = 4, you didn't, you weren't worried about being in a crowd of people who believed it was 3.
right.
It's just such a self-evident that you don't give it a second thought anymore. It's that kind of obvious, but it's not obvious until it's obvious, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Oh dear.
Yeah, I know. What makes me think of one of my favorite sayings is that you can't unring a bell, and no matter how many people say, well, I didn't hear the bell, and no, I didn't hear the bell at all. But you still, if you heard it, you heard it. You can't really unhear it.
You cannot unhear it, no. You can't unsay something. You can't unsee things, right?
Right.
And it's, you know, my job is to get people interested enough in this that they'll do the inquiry. That's my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
That they'll be convinced enough that this makes sense, and it seems to be the only reasonable way out of suffering, that they invest the energy in it, overcome the initial discomfort of having to question every assumption you have, and eventually begin to settle into a completely different way of being, which is much more free and much more alive, much more vital and vivid, much more childlike and playful.
Yes. And you know what? This is a perfect time for me to say this. I invite people, because I love that you said it's where become interested enough to do this inquiry because it's the only reasonable way out of suffering. Well, it seems to be, you know, which is good. And on doing so, I would like to, if you are listening right now and you're thinking, yes, you know what, I am interested enough and I would like to go down this path. These are, you know what, the thing is, you can't go wrong. I think this is the fun part too. You can't fail. Like, you ask a question, you explore it. This is just inquiry. And yes, you know, GP, you've got your course coming up, which is the four powers of creation. And we'll, we are talking about them all together now. They're just kind of mumble jumbling them, which is great. But I love how you have introductions to each one of these four powers. Then there's the actual pre-recorded material on each one of the powers. And then there's a live event, which you get to interact with you and ask those questions like I get to every Tuesday here on the Flow of Enlightenment. And it's a 90-minute live call, but it's, you know, up to just under 4 hours of pre-recorded materials. And there's just so much more. But if you guys would like to do this, it is called the Four. Come on gpwalsh.com to the website and sign up, because it's only $189 US for all of that pre-recorded stuff and your ticket to the live event. And it's happening on April 22nd. It's a Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And even if you couldn't make it, it's still worth it, because you know what? You'll get the replay and somebody is asking a question that you are wanting to ask. I know it. Because that's, as much as I can talk and love asking questions, I go to your lives, GP, and I'm like, I don't really actually have a question because everybody else is asking them.
Yes, that does happen. There's a special link for it. It's gpwalsh.com/4powers, the number 4 and powers.
Oh, well, look.
And there's
at that.
A video there that'll explain what's involved in the class, and that's where you can register for it.
Yes, thank you. You know what? I was just going to have them go searching. But number 4 in powers is a little bit more. See, look at that. You're already helping them on their journey. It's like, but you know, we'll go to commercial. When we come back, we'll actually just mention those 4 powers so that you can see what we're going to be talking about. Well, GP is going to be sharing, and well, it will help you to be free, yes, of your cage of dissatisfaction here. Well, we'll see you guys soon.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
All right, you guys are here with GP Walsh as I, Lisa Berry, ask him these fun questions, solving life's mysteries. Well, not mysteries, you know what? These are solving life's suffering. It's alleviating. Well, maybe solving.
Yeah.
And gosh, you know, I think of so many people and I listen to these commercials and I think, yeah, the people are, you know, I think the world goes through these cycles, you know, maybe in the 80s, they're all worried about how big their hair was and colorful their outfits were. And then, you know, and then now we're worried about we're getting enough, you know, bandwidth to get on the internet to make sure you're online and streaming. But, you know, does culture dictate completely what our identity and beliefs are when it comes to these four powers of creation? Do we really actually have power over our four powers?
The first three, without the fourth, no, you don't. And that's the big realization. And if people realized that the ego, that sense of identity that they don't question, they didn't create. It was culturally imposed. And it's not who you are. And it reaches, oh my God, it reaches into everything. We're talking about how you dress, how you think, what your work is, the career you chose, the people you hang out with, where you live, what you do, the entertainment. These are all functions of interest. And if our sense of identity is not who we really are, none of those interests, desires, or aspirations are going to be genuine. And this is what people experience when that sense of dissatisfaction. Nothing is working quite right. Well, right, because it's not you. You're pursuing a desire that belongs to your culture, not to you. This is the great liberation of it, and it's a tough pill to swallow, because we think, okay, I'm going to get the things that I want. And I ask, well, who are you? Because if you don't know who you are, you cannot trust your desires. Period. Ooh. If you're acting out a different version of yourself that isn't you, and you've mistaken for you, all those desires aren't going to be your desires. You're going to get them, and you're going to, why doesn't this feel good? Because it's not you. It is the cultural version of you you have been acting out. It's that simple. Yeah, here's a little exercise, a little fun little exercise you could do.
Okay.
I want everybody just picture in your mind yourself. Just put a picture of yourself in your mind, right? And everybody does it. Looks, probably maybe 5 feet away, probably waist up, maybe a whole body shot. Maybe some people a close-up like what you look like in a mirror, right? But that's the image you're holding. Right? Now, here's a little tidbit. I want you to ponder this. That image that you have in mind of yourself, when I say picture yourself, you've never seen it. You've seen pictures, you've seen videos, you've seen a mirror, but that image you say is me, you have never actually seen directly yourself. And yet we walk around with an image, not of what we're experiencing, but how others see us. And I think that's me.
Or how we think others see us even.
Yes, but you know how you look on a video or a picture of you or something like that? Which is how somebody else would look at you. So everything we know about ourselves is what others have told us about ourselves. Self-inquiry is, what do I know about me directly? Not hearsay, not secondhand information, but directly. How do I picture myself without an image from somebody else's point of view? What's my point of view? Or as I like to say, what do you look like from a distance of zero?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Yes, you wouldn't.
It's a very powerful thing to just ponder, and it can break down all sorts of assumptions you're holding about yourself. You're not who you think you are. It's that simple. And the discovery of who you are will mean now you can trust your interests, you can trust your desires, you can trust your aspirations, you can trust your choices, because they're actually coming from you. And not from the imposed version of yourself, which is completely cultural. The ego is a cultural construction.
Yes. Yeah. Question then, if we're talking about dissatisfaction and truly being happy, if we've made a choice or decision or we act a certain way and we really are happy, we believe we're happy with it, is that really us then? Like, do I really like pink?
It's really important to distinguish between, there's stuff that are preferences, right?
Okay.
Yeah, you really like pink. Did you always like pink? Are you always going to like pink? Preferences, like everything else, they come and go. They're transient. They don't define you.
Okay.
They're only your experience in the moment. And it's okay, right? Okay. I mean, there's certain things I prefer over other things, right? But I don't prefer the same things I did 20 years ago or when I was five, right? Those are all, I don't play with my little trucks anymore.
I did see that you have a cute little stuffed bear, though, when you do videos.
I do have a stuffed bear and a bunny, yeah, that keep me company. Yeah, I do have that. But yeah, they're harmless because they don't create any suffering.
Right.
You know, I'm only interested in those things that create suffering. If it creates suffering, it's of importance to me. If it doesn't, it's just it's okay. It's no big deal. It's a preference. Preferences come and go. It's no big deal.
But
the image of myself that keeps me limited and stuck and in repetitive patterns, now that's different. I need to address that because it creates suffering. Mm. So if I just recognize I've got a preference and preference is going to come and go and I may like it, I may not even like it tomorrow. And everybody's had that experience, you know. Oh, I really want something. You get it. And a week later, it's for sale on eBay, right? Because you shift, right? Or it didn't fit, or something wasn't quite right about it. We all have an intuitive sense of who we are, because who you are is a reality. It's the truth. It's not something that comes and goes. It's not going to go away. Your original innocence, the original you, which has only been covered up by conditioning and the ego, is still here. It just has to be discovered, and it hides in places like you can see it when something really does resonate with you. That's the real you that's resonating. That's why it feels that way. That's why the aha moment feels like an aha moment. Something inside goes, yes, yes, that's right, that's true. Well, the only thing that could say that's true is the truth in you. The falsity can't say that's true. Only the truth can say that's true. Which is the four powers are attention, belief, and identity. Those are the first three. And they're blind. They're completely created by the culture until the fourth power comes online, which is the superpower of discrimination. The capacity to discern what otherwise I'm just mindlessly, unconsciously believing. I get this enough distance to look at my identity, my beliefs, and where my attention is going, and say, whoa, this doesn't work. And until that dawns, and that's consciousness, that's the awakening, right? You are stuck in those three. But discrimination is the doorway to the transcendent wisdom. It's the part of you that can tell the difference, that this is better than that. And it's not just a matter of opinion. It really is better. It's that part of you that hears something and goes, wow, yeah, that's true. And you're drawn to it.
Yes.
It's that intuition that just kind of leads you to something and you may not even know why. Like how I was led to the book, I Am That, and I have no idea why until I read it. And I go, oh, now I know why I was led to it.
Right, yes.
It just stood out on the shelf to me.
Yeah, and because you and it was just I'm going to go here, the frequency, the vibration, like you didn't even know it was in the book yet. It just...
No, had no idea.
It was like vibrating at you in its little fun things.
Yeah, I was reading, I read the book Your Sacred Self by Wayne Dyer. And I never really got into him. I didn't read his books. I was reading that one book. About halfway through, he makes a quote from this fellow Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I don't even remember what the quote was, but for some reason those words stuck out to me. In fact, I didn't read any more of the book. I never finished it. I saw those words. I actually didn't pick up that book again. And it was from I Am That, and Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I was walking through the East West Bookstore down off of Union Square in New York City. And I was just walking, and all of a sudden on the shelf there's this golden black thing. It says, I Am That. And I went, oh, yeah. And I pulled it down and I bought it. And it took me 2 years to read it for the first time. I was so blown away. I'd read two sentences, I would be stopped dead in my tracks. And I would ponder it for a couple of days. It was just the most profound thing I had ever run across. Mm. This is how it happens.
Yes.
I have a friend of mine who was in a bookstore once, and a book fell on her head.
Oh, gosh.
This was in Buenos Aires. They don't have earthquakes, and there was nobody around.
Oh, that's
the book
crazy.
Literally fell off the shelf onto her head.
No, it's not because the book wants the book is an inanimate object. I think I don't know, or is it other energies around moving it, or she was just was so resonant. It was so resonant that it had a magnetic field and went zap.
Yeah, don't be so quick to call things inanimate.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I personify everything, so I'm happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, things don't have always vibrate at the same level of consciousness that we do. Mm. But
yes.
But everything is consciousness, right? I like to distinguish this because people, does everything have consciousness? And I go, no. Nothing has consciousness. Consciousness has everything.
Oh.
Everything is in consciousness and vibrates in some way, because consciousness is the infinite substance that can vibrate in infinite variations. So everything is self-modulation of consciousness, no matter what it is, no matter how inanimate it may seem. It is consciousness vibrating.
Yes.
For lack of a better word, vibration is good enough. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We can understand that one. Yes. I have your next T-shirt. It says, "Discernment draws you to the truth."
Just like truth it.
Yes, that's awesome too.
Just truth it.
Well, there's so many things that just hit. Like for me, there in the I like that when you. There was something first we talked about, you know, of course you can have preferences. And what is important is that if it causes suffering or, you know, not happiness, then we want to explore that. And when something resonates with you, it's the truth in you that is recognizing that the truth in it. Those are biggies.
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, how do you recognize truth? Well, the only thing that can recognize truth is truth. A lie can't recognize truth.
Right, because
a falsity doesn't, a belief can't recognize it. Only the truth can do that. So at the essence of your power of discrimination and wisdom is the truth, the one infinite, impersonal truth, the true I am.
Okay, that was so cool because when you just said that, a belief can't recognize truth, identity can't recognize truth, and your attention just doesn't recognize truth either. So that's a cool way of... getting to know truth.
The truth that you are. Yeah, it's because you are the truth that it's recognized. Because the truth is not a thought. The truth is being itself. You know, in Sanskrit, the word for truth and the word for being are the same word, sat.
Yes, that's right. Sat is truth, is being, or is being is truth.
And being, yes.
Hmm. I love that. And you do the sat songs every Sunday. And so I was...
Which is communion with truth or communion with your own being. Mm. That's what satsang means.
Yes, commune. I love that word. Oh, well, I am going to just invite everybody once again to a few things. And that is to satsang every Sunday. GP Walsh has, you have your YouTube channel that you can go there, and that way it gives him a little bit more interaction. Of course, you are always invited to ask a question during our show. I didn't announce the phone number this time, but I did post it on the Facebook group. Because we're really inviting people to ask their questions either at questions@gpwalsh.com. Did I say that? Yes. Or join the Facebook group, which we would love to have you there. We have over 1,000 people there, and they just, the coming together in community and sharing and helping and just, we're all on that journey and it's just beautiful. So please either join the group, but really, be a part of sign up for the Light Letter. That's your newsletter. And then that way you never miss one of the events. But as we said, coming up is the Four Powers of Creation. It's April 22nd. We would love for you to be there live, but if you can't, do not let that discourage you. You will get so much out of just even going through the materials. I've only done the introduction to each one and I am blown away. So there's certainly plenty there. And GP, I'll do this one invitation. I'll do a surprise. If you are listening and you can't help yourself, you've been, you know, getting your friends to listen to the show or, you know, telling everybody about it, then you probably want to be, you want more information on how to be an affiliate of our work here with GP's message. And we have just started this, created this new program. And I'm really loving it because we're just doing it the way we want. It's through our truths that we're creating this. So if you think you'd like to be a part of the community, we need to hear from you.
Uncle G wants you.
Yeah. Oh, the t-shirts are coming out in stream. So
are coming out soon. Yeah.
So everybody, we're just so happy to show up here every Tuesday for the Flow of Enlightenment. Please share it with everybody. Let us know that you like us other, you know, by listening and giving those little stars and thumbs up and all that stuff. But there is a way to, you know, end suffering, to alleviate the suffering. So I know, GP, that's what you're here to help everybody do. So thank you so much.
That's great. Yeah, this is what I'm here for.
Aw, that's beautiful. Okay, guys, we'll see you next week and hopefully on the site. Bye, everyone.